You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On Tuesday, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson survived a vote of no confidence from his Conservative Party colleagues with a margin of 211 votes to 148. Former Tory leaders Margaret Thatcher, John Major and Theresa May have in the past survived no confidence votes, only either to step down shortly thereafter or suffer defeat in the next general election. To find out what this could mean for the future of both Boris Johnson and the Tory party, I spoke to Associate Professor Neil Curtis and started by asking him whether surviving this vote means Prime Minister Johnson is in the clear yet.
I don't think so. I imagine there's going to be challenges to him again in the future. The point is his behaviour is so bad and he's so untrustworthy. And he can't help but lie, and he's so incompetent that something else will occur in the not too distant future that will threaten him again, I would think. And I imagine there's still some material to come out that people are holding on him. So he's not in the clear. Not at all, really.
There was a video doing the rounds on Twitter after the vote of Jacob Rees-Mogg, the Minister for Brexit Opportunities, after Theresa May survived a vote of no confidence in 2018 with a better proportion than Boris Johnson. He said it was a terrible result for the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister must realise that under all constitutional norms, she ought to go and see the Queen urgently and resign. Do you expect him to keep his tune towards Boris?
Rees-Mogg is in no way an honourable man. I mean, none of them who are currently working in the British government are, given the state of the politics and their attitudes and their behaviour. I mean, Rees-Mogg, like all of them, is profoundly ideological and of the hard right persuasion, Christian hard right. And he believes that Johnson is his man, whereas Theresa May wasn't. So it's got nothing to do with what happened to Johnson. I mean, he lost 148 of Tory backbenchers, I think. As you say, May only lost 117, and yet Rees-Mogg will come out and defend him. So, I mean, they're hell-bent on an ideological project, which is, first of all, it's based on getting rid of as many Labour protections as they possibly can, which is why they removed the country from the European Union, because the European Union still protects labour rights. And that was really what they wanted to do. And also to help them privatise the NHS. So, you know, these people are deeply, deeply ideologically driven and completely committed to a project of enriching a small group of people at the expense of everyone else. And we live now in an age of complete unaccountability. So if he can stay there, he will stay there, and Rees-Mogg will support him, as he always has.
Is it possible for Boris Johnson to win back the support of these so-called rebel Tories? What kinds of things would it take for him to earn their trust back?
Yeah, well, they're already talking about what he can do to win their trust. There's nothing about trust or his behaviour or his character, which we know is completely flawed. They're now talking about him immediately bringing in tax cuts, which is the usual sort of Tory thing. Again, this is a sort of 40-year-old policy, which is just about moving as much wealth upwards as possible, cutting as many services, cutting welfare on the backs of that. It's the sort of thing that Luxon wants to do in New Zealand. I mean, it's failed completely over the last 40 years, but we seem to be sort of locked into this dogmatic policy that taxes must be cut all of the time. He's increased national service contributions to pay for the NHS because he's not paying sufficiently out of regular taxes to support the NHS. So they're just going to go back to right-wing basics, which is cut taxes, move wealth upwards, leave less for public services and welfare, and continue their attempt to so-called dismantle the state, which is what has been the aim since Thatcher came in 79. Although, I mean, that's a complete illusion about dismantling the state. They actually want to use the state for their own purposes, which is wealth acquisition.
Given that historically surviving a no-confidence vote doesn't tend to bode well for a leader, thinking of May, Thatcher, Major, is it too early to be talking about candidates to potentially replace Johnson? Who do you think we could see in a leadership challenge?
I really don't know. It would have to be somebody that's not a current minister, because they're all so tied to Johnson and they're all sort of so much part of his kind of lies and fabrications and incompetence that I really don't know. It will simply be a Tory backbencher that's got a lot of respect. It won't necessarily be a minister. So at the moment, I don't think it's worth speculating who that might be, because he's clearly going to hang around for a lot longer, you know?
How do you think the Tories will fare after all of this, regardless of whether or not Boris resigns? Have they lost too much support with their antics over the past term?
I still got some faith in the British people that they can see through it. What we have now is government through kakistocracy, which is a lovely term that I use. Comes from the Greek, you know, meaning kind of rubbish or worst or even sort of excrement. It can be used in that term. So it's a government of the completely incompetent. But what they will do, and I think where he has possibilities in the future, or he thinks he's got possibility to save himself, is to double down on the Brexit rhetoric, right, which was anti-foreigners, anti-immigrants, anti-refugees, trying to rehabilitate Imperial Britain, all that stuff around sort of the royal family and great Britishness, a kind of implied ethno-nationalism as well, kind of appealing to whiteness, this constant sort of hard right critique of wokeism and all that sort of stuff. I think he feels he can still squeeze something out of that. Of course, you know, I mean, this is something I've written about quite a lot in my last book, which was called Hate in Precarious Times, which is how when people are feeling kind of threatened or at risk or unstable, or their lives are precarious, you know, a charismatic leader can come along and present a rhetoric that makes people feel stronger, right? If they're feeling kind of weak, you sell them the narrative of Great Britain, and if they associate with Great Britain, they automatically become great themselves, and you pick on weaker people. You make people feel strong and secure by giving them a hate object, right, which is migrants, European Union, refugees, all of this sort of stuff. And I think they believe they can still squeeze something out of that. I mean, you only have to look at the policy for refugees, which is shipping them all off to Rwanda, which is utterly appalling. That's where they're going to go. I mean, they've just done, he's looking to do, make executive changes to the standards, the political standards within government. So they're moving towards a sort of more kind of autocracy as well, and racism. And I think they believe that he can squeeze something out of that. But I think the British people, the people that voted for him, particularly working class people who voted for him, did it out of desperation because they thought he was going to deliver something. But, you know, the emperor has got no clothes on. And I think the British people realize that. And I do firmly believe they will only be duped once by someone like him. And I don't think he realizes how upset people are about Partygate and what people had to suffer while they were partying in Downing Street. I mean, one of his loyal supporters came out the other day and said he's sick to death of hearing about mourners trying to make political gain out of Partygate. You know, that's how insensitive they are, that the people they really don't like are mourners. I mean, you couldn't make it up.
That was Associate Professor Neil Curtis from the University of Auckland.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.